There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And I can't wait to talk with you about a bunch of different issues and a lot of guests coming up on today's show. And we'll get into, in the second hour, it's a guest who used to come on the show with me a bunch in days gone by and talking about that dismal science of economics. But right now, it's one that I think a lot of people are talking about. And Daniel J. Smith, who used to be at Troy University, he's our professor at MTSU. He's going to... I try to do that like I'm hip. Middle Tennessee State University. He's going to join us in hour number two. Should be an interesting conversation with him. Also, coming up on today's show, we'll check... Well, I'll do this right now. It's an updated number. I did get a note here from the Mobile County Health Department that they have moved their normal presser to a little bit later today. I think that's going to be at 3 at Government Plaza. But right now, the numbers have changed since the morning show, and they are up for cases of coronavirus in the state of Alabama. Now, 283 cases in the state. 10 cases in Mobile County. That's been a significant jump. Baldwin County at 4, and Washington County still at 1. As you talk about those counties and more, you're talking about Congressional District 1, and our Congressman Bradley Byrne is joining us right now to talk more about the federal angle and the local angle here for coronavirus and the economy. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Sean.
Yeah, those numbers are climbing. I'm looking at the... Obviously, people say, well, look at California, look at Washington State. Sure, that's bad news. But I'm thinking back here at home, these numbers are climbing, and that's not unexpected.
No, it's not. So what's happened is we've increased the number of tests that we've given. We've given over 2,800 tests in the state of Alabama, and we have 283 cases. That's a positive rate of about 10%, which is just right on the mark for what Dr. Fauci told us we would be seeing. So... not unexpected at all. Glad the numbers down in this part of the state are as low as they are, 15. Mm-hmm. As you probably know, they've got almost 100 cases in Jefferson County alone. So compared to the rest of the state, we're doing a little better. But as our testing goes up, you're going to see the number of cases in Southwest Alabama go up with it.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to... Well, I do want to get into a statistics discussion, but we won't. But I want you to explain in regular folks' language what we're talking about here is that as you increase the testing, it may not physically be more cases of COVID-19 out there. We're just now aware of them, correct?
That's right. That's right. And we've known for some time that as we ramp up testing that we would see this. But we've got to get the amount of testing up, both to help the healthcare professionals, but also help inform us on a macro basis. All right, where is this thing now? Where is it going? Because remember what Dr. Fauci said, we know we've turned a corner when the number of new cases per day starts going down. Well, we can't get to that point till we get testing at the right level. So nationwide, we've actually done a lot better. We're up to 367,000 tests now. So we're beginning to get to the point where we're getting the testing we need to be able to get the sort of macro data we need. But it's going to take at least another week or so for us to even get that much information to be able to know what we're doing.
The tests coming from different sources, I know we've talked about the private test and kind of what we've learned from Church of the Highlands up in Birmingham. I was talking to Mayor Stimson about that. But on the public side of this, you have Mayor Stimson saying he's, till next week sometime or early April. It looks like early April before we have tests available. What's going on? Are those the ones coming on the public side or are those private tests? What's your understanding of that?
Those are mainly private tests. There's a steady flow, it is increasing, but there's a steady flow of public tests. But the big jump up in testing is coming from these private labs. And more of those have been approved by the FDA, so you're going to see more and more of those coming online, which is good. And remember, April the 1st is a week from today. Mm-hmm. So that's a short time frame if you stop and think about it.
So with these additional tests, obviously we're talking about the, as you get more tests, there's probably going to be more people identified. I wonder if we reach that, because you talked about it, what Dr. Fauci said, reaching that plateau or that high point before we start declining a number of cases. You know, I wonder how quickly we get there. In other words, is that going on or will be going on before the testing catches up with it? See what I'm saying? Is it naturally occurring before we can even see it in testing?
Well, there's an epidemiologist from the University of Florida, and he's been echoed by a couple other experts, that's predicting now that we're going to reach the top end of this in 3 weeks. So that means that both deaths and positive tests will get to the top in terms of rate per day in 3 weeks. And then, as Dr. Fauci said, if that's the right moment, then you have this sort of steady downward number in the number of newly reported cases. So once you get to that point, then you know you've turned the corner. Now, this thing ebbs and flows. We've got to be prepared for ebbs and flows. But that's actually, from my point of view, pretty helpful that we've got as few as 3 weeks that we have to look forward to before we get to the point where we're coming down the other side of this.
Now, I know President Trump talking about yesterday for Easter to start getting things back to normal for the economy. That's just a general, right? I mean, that's aspirational. Yeah. It could very easily be. What I worry is people will think that if it's not ready to go by April, then there's something wrong. It could go longer very easily, right?
Yeah, we could go into mid to late April with this thing. But this is all, every time a scientist gets up and says something, they've got to give you their best projection because we don't know.
Sure.
But this is the first time, and I saw this epidemiologist from Florida, that's the first time I've heard somebody that's put a hard number on it. And I'm sure if he were on the phone with you and me, he'd say, well, it's a hard number, but it could slip a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're hearing, though, whether it's 3 weeks or something a little bit longer, it's not 3 months, okay?
Yeah.
And that's been part of the problem here. We've had a lot of the public health professionals, some of whom are just getting up and saying, look, we don't know, so we're giving you the worst-case scenario, and some of whom haven't done that. And it's not very useful for us as policymakers, as governmental officials, to make the decisions we've got to make about people's lives and the economy to get that sort of information. And I think if you watch the data as it comes in day by day, you'll see it continue to climb until it's going to get to a point sometime in April, my prediction, sometime mid to late April, when they're going to say, all right, now it's beginning to come back down in terms of the number of new cases. And that's when we know we've turned the corner. Now, not all of America's equal here.
Right.
You got 10 times the number of cases in New York State that you do in the state of California. I mean, New York
yeah.
State is the hot spot in the United States of America. We have a couple of other hot spots here and there. Obviously, Seattle's been a hot spot. For reasons I'm not real clear about, New Orleans is a hot spot.
Sure
but
is.
The real hot spot in America is New York State, and within New York State, New York City.
Well, okay, but I mean, it's all guesses on my part. You could say all the people that come and go out of New York as a port of call, whether they're coming in by, you know, whatever method. They're coming in, port of call, and traveling from Asia or traveling from Europe. That's one point. But I wonder if we look at it here, somewhere where we don't have those the issues they have in New York State. If we didn't, this gets into a bigger question, but if we didn't do what we're doing now, the self-quarantining, the social distancing, eventually we could reach those numbers. I mean, this virus could bounce around enough to become New York. It'd take us a lot longer, but that could happen.
Well, it could happen. Part of the problem with New York is density of population. So if you look at the total number of cases in the U.S., it's just under 60,000. 30,000 cases are in New York State, and most of those are in New York City, where you have very dense populations of people. In rural states like Alabama, we just don't have the density of population. Even in our cities, we don't necessarily have the
right
density of population. So I think that's part of what's going on here. But you've got some densely populated areas in California. So why is there such a huge increase in New York and, you know, not nearly that much of an increase in California. It's not clear at this point. We'll have to learn as we go along. But the truth of the matter is that we are getting more tests out there. We do have the president ramping up production through the Defense Production Act of PPE and related devices that we need to be able to treat people. So in terms of actually doing what we've got to do to combat the disease, I think we've made a real turn, and we need to understand how we've made that turn.
Now, you can imagine that there's many in the audience that are not completely up to snuff on the DPA and how that works. Can you give us a little cursory discussion of DPA?
Remember from your high school history books about what had to happen in World War II,
right?
Which is essentially we just revamped all of domestic manufacturing production for wartime production. Well, on a much smaller scale, that's what we're doing here. You would take factories that are building one sort of thing, and you turn them into factories that build ventilators or build these special masks, et cetera. And so the president has that power under the Defense Production Act to do that. He's invoked those powers. Now, he's invoking them working with business and industry. He's not walking in there, you know, with a bunch of mandates saying, you have to do what I say. He's working with them to make this happen. And a number of them have been very cooperative. So this is a national effort, and I think it's going to be producing what we need here. We still have some shortages right now. There's no question about it. The shortages are acute in New York. There's no question about that. But I think that we've turned the corner in terms of our ability to produce what we need to produce. We're just going to have to stay at it and understand it's a day-by-day thing.
Yeah, I've had a call at my desk yesterday from somebody here in AL1 in manufacturing asking what he could do to help, kind of what you were talking about in the present. So this isn't a news clip, y'all. This is a call at my desk. Somebody who has a manufacturing facility here, he said, do they come to him? Can he, if he's interested in helping out, is there a process? Do you have any idea how somebody would do that? This person has a machine shop and they're looking to help.
Yeah, what he should do is call my Washington office, and we will put him in touch with the people in the White House task force that are working on this. And my White House office number is 202-225-4931, 202-225-4931, and we'll put him in touch with the right person. By the way, my office in Washington is fully open, as is my district office. We haven't missed a beat. We're still doing what we need to do to fulfill the obligations we have with the people down here.
Speaking of doing what you have to do, I'm watching the other body in the Senate, and so they've come to an agreement. Help me understand. They came to agreement, but the vote, if it's unanimous, they don't have to show up, or help me here. How does that work?
Well, in the Senate, they can do a procedure that allows them to vote without having to go through all their procedural requirements, which are substantial in the Senate, by what's called unanimous consent, or UC.
Okay.
But if one senator objects, they got to go through all those onerous procedures that will take a fair amount of time. Now, as I understand it, they don't have complete text of the bill yet, so it's a little premature to say exactly what they're going to do, because nobody's going to agree to it until they see the text. And I don't blame any senator for doing that. They need to be able to understand it. But they have been very good, as opposed to what Pelosi did 2 weeks ago. They have been very good about putting out the changes they've been making to the bill as they go along. So, like me in my office, we've been able to watch it step by step. So now it's going to plop down a bill that we hadn't seen anything of when they get finished with it. So a lot of us have been able not only to watch it, you know, point by point as it's gone along. We've been given direct input through our leadership, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. So this is very unlike what we went through 2 weeks ago. Now, assuming the Senate gets this thing passed this afternoon or tonight, the question is, what is the House going to do? Because we are not in formal session right now. We're in pro forma session. So all of us, virtually all of us, are back in our districts, as I am. So there were a number of members that wanted us to fly to not have to fly up there to vote by distance. But you can't do that under our rules. If one House member objects to our taking up this bill under unanimous consent of the House, then all of us will have to fly up there to go on the floor and vote on it. I think it's highly unlikely we'll get unanimous consent in the House. So my guess is that sometime tomorrow or Friday, we will all have to fly to Washington, all of us in the House, to vote on the final versions the Senate passes this afternoon or tonight. Now, if the Senate goes beyond this afternoon or tonight, that just means the House is postponed another day or so. Now, the big question there is, what is Nancy Pelosi going to do? You know, she comes flying in to San Francisco Sunday, throws a monkey wrench and everything, says, oh, I don't like that bill, produces her own 1,400-page bill with every liberal wish there ever was in the world thrown into it, basically stymied the negotiations that were going very well until she showed up. And now the Senate, I think, has basically said, look, we've got more important things to do here, and they're just doing their thing. And so Pelosi and her gang's going to figure out, are they going to try to sort of stop this whole process, or are they going to say, nope, we're going to have to just go along with what the Senate has put out there. There is, I'm not going to try to project that, because you can't predict what Nancy Pelosi and that gang's going to do.
For sure. I would come back. I want to talk more about what that you understand in the Senate bill, what that means. It's very interesting, y'all. Listen there. The congressman has had more time to be aware of what's in a Senate bill than the bill that was presented to him in the House. I think there's a tell there. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, right back to our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne. Check it in from right here in district, but you said it could be tomorrow, it could be Friday, that you most likely, it looks like, will be flying back up to vote.
Right. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, but it might be tomorrow night. More likely, it'll be Friday.
Let's talk about some of the pieces. Am I fair to say that you've had more time to be familiar with the Senate bill than you were the one presented to you in the House?
Yeah, since I only had less than an hour in the House, yeah, I've had more time to study the Senate bill.
just want y'all to realize that. And okay, let's talk about, so what you've seen in the Senate bill, break it down for us here at home, the high points in this.
Yeah, well, let's start with what it's going to do for individuals. There will be individual tax rebates to people. It's $1,200 for individuals, $2,400 for couples, and then $500 per child. So if it's a man, woman, and two children, that's 24 plus $2,500, that's $3,400. It phases out at $75,000 in income for individuals, $150,000 for people joint, and it phases out completely once you get to $99,000 per individual and $198,000 for joint filers. So it's a pretty nice individual rebate for people, whether you've lost your job or not. It just goes out to everybody in the country who's, you know, got who files anything with the IRS. Now, that's for those individuals. There's also a substantial plus up here for unemployment insurance. So on top of whatever your state pays in benefits, the federal government's going to add $600 per week per person filing for unemployment benefits for 4 months, and then we're going to add 13 weeks of extended benefits on top of that. That's a $250 billion benefit to people who've lost their jobs in America. And the whole idea here is that we're trying to, you know, cover the gap for people who've been laid off, because most importantly in this bill, it's a small business interruption part for businesses less than 500 employees. It allows them to go get what's called an SBA 7A loan. And that loan can be had from their bankers, okay? They don't have to go through the SBA or the federal government. They go directly to whoever they bank with. And those banks make the loans to them, and then the federal government stands behind those loans. Now, you get, it's a pretty sweet deal for the small businesses. It's a 4% rate, except if you're covering payroll costs, like for group health benefits, salaries, mortgage interest, rent, utilities, and interest on debt that's been incurred before February the 15th, all of that's going to be forgiven. You won't have to pay that loan back. And why are they doing that? We're doing that to encourage small businesses not to lay off people, so we don't have that many people on the unemployment program, so these businesses stay intact as we get through the difficult part of this whole healthcare thing. Now,
That's huge. You get
up to $10 million per business or 2.5 times your average monthly payroll. So it's a pretty generous loan.
Okay, I would go back through it and put it in. You put it pretty good here, but I just asked specific questions. So to go back through, the small business goes to their bank, people they bank with. Is it a voucher, or the banks are just aware that the forms to put out for this loan? We just go in and say, hey, we're here for the small business loan, or how's that done?
Well, various banks, and we've talked to the Alabama Bankers Association, so we know a lot of members of the Alabama Bankers Association are already 7A lenders.
Okay.
So it's not like they've got to join the program. They're already in the program.
Okay.
All they need to have from the federal government are the guidelines that they have to go by to make sure that the person getting the loan, you know, qualifies. But it's so darn, we've loosened up the requirements so much and got rid of so much of the regulatory red tape, that's going to be fairly easy. And the reason why the bank would make the loan is that the federal government stands behind it 100%. So the bank's not going to lose a dime. They're not going to lose a penny. So there's every incentive in the world for the bank to make the loan. And the loan will be forgiven, which means the bank will be paid back by the federal government to the extent that the business is using the loan for payroll, you know, paying for group health benefits, paying for rent, mortgage interest, et cetera. It's a sweet deal for small businesses that are really up against the wall right now. And we want it to be a sweet deal because we want them to stay open, keep their payrolls intact, so that when we're through this darn thing, they can get back to work.
So even a business that, look at a restaurant business, right, that has a situation where they can't open their doors to their main dining room or something like that, and they need fewer of the staff, they would essentially be paid, like a paid furlough for those folks until it's time to come back.
Yeah. They just say, you're on my payroll. We can't open up right now. As soon as we open up again, come back to work, but you're going to get your paycheck every month. And the company's going to pay for it, because they're able to get this loan from their bank, not from the federal government, the bank. And the bank's going to make the loan because the bank knows the federal government stands behind it. So this is about as generous as we can make it to provide an incentive and encouragement to small businesses not to shut their doors, to stay open as, you know, with their payroll intact, et cetera, until we get through the worst part of this and we can start reopening the American economy. And we've been most, I mean, I in particular have been most concerned about small businesses. We can't, you know, they just don't have the means by which they can get through something like this. This is as generous as we can make it because we want to keep these small firms intact. Now, there's a separate provision, as you know, for anybody that's in what they call these severely distressed business sectors. And that's a different thing altogether because that's a true loan that won't be forgiven. But And we did that. That's the right thing to do because we've got some businesses down at the beach. You've got Shores and Orange Beach, by the way. They could be severely impacted if we don't have that for them. But this thing for the small businesses, it's a loan that can and probably almost all will be forgiven. So it's a sweet deal to help them stay in business.
I'm sitting here going, where's the catch, Congressman? I mean, is there something we're not talking about? Is this real? I mean,
the catch is that it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, well, it's a cost to all of us taxpayers long term as we go further and further into. I mean, we're talking $2 trillion now, but those people smarter than me said that's just the beginning. Do you believe that's true?
Well, I don't know yet. I don't want to start projecting. It depends on how long this healthcare thing lasts. The longer it lasts, the more expensive it's going to be for the economy. The shorter it lasts, the less expensive it's going to be for the economy. And we've already taken a hit. There's no getting around the hit we've already taken. We're simply trying to A, cushion the blow, and B, allow these firms to stay in place so that when we're over, or at least we start relaxing the restrictions, these small businesses can come back to life.
Now, it seems to me that this would supersede the question, because there's the paid sick leave question, right, that goes on here. Because if somebody was in a small business, if they were going to be out on paid sick leave, that whole process, it doesn't matter if the company's going to be able to write their check in full.
Yeah, but even with that program, for some reason you didn't qualify for the first one. I can't imagine a business that doesn't, that's under 500 employees. Even under that program, you get your money back for paying the sick leave, so long as it's sick leave the person has taken related to the coronavirus.
Because I know there were, you know, the, also the secondary part of that was if people had to stay home because children, you know, that was discussed, children were out of school. But it seems like, once again, on small business, just 500 or under, this answers like that question. It also would answer the child care question because they could be furloughed at home and still get a check.
Right.
It seems but like that answers a bunch of questions.
Yeah, and, you know, I was fit to be tied about that second phase bill that Pelosi tried to cram down our throat in the middle of the night. They needed a 90-page technical corrections bill because they screwed it up so badly.
Right.
And a lot of small business people were screaming about that bill. I voted against it, and they were right to be screaming about it. And all of us, whether we voted for or against the bill, who are big small business people, you know, we were really telling our leadership, you've got to do something to help small businesses. And this is the answer. And I got to say, they really responded. They listened to us. They listened to small business. And I think they come up with something that's, you know, it's not perfect because we're in an imperfect situation. But I think they've done as best as you can do under these circumstances. But it does cost a lot of money.
It does. I mean, the market seems to like it. I see a lot of green on the board today. The market likes it. But, yeah, long term, it's part of the bigger discussion of, you know, how in debt we are. I saw a headline this morning, and I don't know if it's accurate, but it said this spending package, stimulus package, is bigger than the budget for domestic and military combined.
That's correct.
Let that sink in. Wow.
Now, that doesn't include the mandatory programs, Social Security, Medicare, and the like, but the discretionary defense spending, discretionary domestic spending, it's like $1.4 trillion, and this will be closer to $2 trillion.
Hey, and I'm seeing a lot of questions here on the individual check, the thing you talked about first. How will that be delivered? Do you know?
It'll be delivered from the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay. So the IRS will be, because I know I've heard some stories about electronic transfer, but if somebody doesn't have electronic banking or something like that, it will be a physical check mailed to them, or?
Yeah, I assume that, you know, the IRS is going to have to come out with its own regs to do this, but the IRS gives tax refunds now by either paper check or electronic funds transfer, so the IRS has its own processes for figuring that out.
There we go. Well, we'll be, and timeline on that is just what depending on when y'all get to go vote, and then I guess how fast it takes the IRS to...
Yeah, as soon as the Senate votes, they'll set us up to have the House vote, and then my assumption is the president will sign it as soon as the House clears it, which, as I say, if the Senate gets through late today, it may be Friday before we actually get to the Senate. But Thursday, Friday, I mean, you know, let's get it done.
There we go. Congressman, thank you for your time. Thanks for the update, and we'll be getting you back on very soon.
Looking forward to it. Oh, by the way, I'm going to have a teletown hall tomorrow night at 5:50.
Okay.
You can get an update tomorrow night if you tune into that, and you'll find the details on that on my website.
All right, so go straight to the website, or can we link. If somebody just goes on Facebook, they can get that link, too, for the website?
Absolutely. You just dial in, and you're right into it. We did one of these last week and had almost 4,000 people. We think there are going to be a lot more tomorrow night.
Very good. I'll be one of them. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you. Good talk to you.
Always good. Congressman Bradley Byrne, check it in. Let me just go country on y'all for a second. How about that, huh? That is huge. Small business folks, I'd like to hear from you, reaction to what you just heard. If that is the deal that is signed, what does that mean for your business? 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and it's Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all. Sean Sullivan, phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Taking your calls, too, on what you just heard Congressman Byrne talk about. Now, this is, once again, has to be voted through, but looks like there's general agreement in the Senate, and hopefully they won't screw it up in the House, and specifically on the small business side. Now, there's a lot of questions I have here, too, about the individual payment. You heard the congressman kind of lay that out. But the small business side, I think, has a better chance, I really do, of turning the economy around, softening the blow out there, keeping people from being unemployed. And I'd like to hear from small business owners what you think, what it means for your business. Let's go first to is it Shana or Shanna in Silver Hill?
Yeah.
Hey, so you're a small business owner, or what? You in the small business?
Yeah, my husband and I we own a small business. It's a charter business, and I just. We don't have any run by my husband and I, and I just said no to the place once all of this goes through, and if is the keyword, it's approved, if there's a place where we can go to see if we would be covered under that umbrella.
Okay, so, and I'm having a little trouble hearing you. But so you're saying how y'all would work it out the way now I'm just what I'm doing is parroting what I heard from the congressman here, but we would go to your banker. And you go to apply for the small business loan. If they are, they should already be somebody set up for small business loans, and they were going to have the go ahead because the full amount is backed by the federal government. So it seems like you bring the documentation and you get the loan, the way I understand it.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that was it.
Okay. That's why, you know, you heard me ask him, okay, let me put this in my language and see if I understand it, because it seemed too good to be true for small business, but he doubled down and said that's what it is. So good news. Good to appreciate the call. Let's go to Kelly in Foley next. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I got the tail end of the conversation with Congressman Byrne. Was there any conversation regarding individuals that are 1099 contract employees? I am a small business owner, and I work with my individuals and pay them by 1099, and I haven't heard of any type of, I guess you'd say, economic stimulus for these individuals to try to give them some help.
That I'm writing that down right now, because I did not get an answer. I did not ask that question, and I should, because a lot of businesses have people that are 1099 as part of that business. So, and those folks, it's not the normal program of employees and deduction and... Kelly, I don't know, but what I'll do is what I can, and I'll go ask those questions and try to get answers to them, because you want to be able to, in your situation, do what other folks do with full-time employees or any kind of employee that's not 1099, a regular employee of the company, because I mean that could mean a lot for you too, I guess, if you're looking at those people that contract, that work with you, to be able to keep them close, keep them, you know, air quotes here, employed until things get better.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in the education business. We own a tutoring company, and we're kind of forbidden to go to work right now. So it would be nice to help my teachers continue to get that extra income.
That would be okay. I'm gonna just be listening. I'm gonna ask that question to the congressman and push it up the line and try to get you an answer.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Kelly.
Thanks for all you're doing for us. Bye bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. This is. Like I said, this is new, obviously. It's only been discussed. I think Congressman Byrne brought this up on the show Friday when he was on with us last week. And so this is new, but my sense of it, and maybe it's coming from a place, you know, as a small business owner that I see it as being super important, but I think there's a lot of people who might agree with me out there that if a small business owner can continue to pay their employees, even if they're forced to be shut down because of social distancing and all these things, what a godsend that is. Now, we can get in the bigger discussion of long-term fiscal policy. It's all out the window at this point. I mean, that stuff is long since. There's $2 trillion, and then there'll be another trillion, there'll be another trillion. I mean, right now, it's out-of-control deficit spending. But what does it mean for the economy? What does it mean for the economy? Do you let it just go down the tubes here because of a virus? Because... remember, the economy was working. The fundamentals of the economy didn't change. It's a virus that impacted the economy. So what do you do for those small business folks? Let me go to Tommy in Irvington next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. So what do you think about all that?
It's great. We need it. You know, it's something that was unforeseen. My question is, people that are on Social Security, are they going to get a cut of this money or not? I haven't heard anybody say anything about that, and I'm just curious.
Well, I would guess the individual portion, you know, where we're talking about what, $1,200 for individuals and as much as $3,000 for families. I think there might be a chance there. Obviously, on the small business side, if you know you weren't employed by that small business, it wouldn't affect you. But I would guess that the check, they're saying the checks, unless you're making over $99,000, right? They said that's where the check cutoff is, or $150,000 is a couple. Yeah, you and I both.
Another question too. I have not heard anybody say a word about it. Are we going to pay taxes on this next year?
No, I asked that question the other day on that, and they said no. I think I asked that question Friday, or one of the guests I had on Monday. No, you know what? I asked it of Doug Jones, and he said no.
Okay, all right, well, that's good. Do appreciate your show. I listen to it as much as possible. You're doing a real great job, and just pray for everybody out there, especially all of our medical people.
Guaranteed.
All of our frontline people. Policemen, firemen,
cashiers, people who hand food over, you know.
Exactly. I went into McDonald's today and went into another grocery store the other day and gave them a big tip because of what they're doing.
Good for you, Tommy. Appreciate your call. We're coming right back. Y'all hold on. Come to the phones next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Talk 50, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And coming to the phones, coming straight to the phones. But Dalton walked in here because one of the questions about contractors, I think Kelly had up. Now, the subtlety there was 1099s. And we're still, and believe me, there's going to be a lot of questions y'all are asking on the text line and on the phone that I just don't know. This is new. I mean, I don't know. But I'm going to try to find the answers. But you were reading something. CNBC had a piece up.
Yeah, so I've been Googling to see what's in this bill, which I still don't think the full text has been released. And this is a CNBC article. Now, it's about the airline industry as a whole, but I think they're talking about more than just that. They said a draft of the Senate bill that CNBC was able to view showed grants of $25 billion for passenger airlines, $4 billion for cargo carriers, and then they had $3 billion for contractors. Now, I don't know if that's just in the airline industry that they're talking about,
or
contractors, or overall. But I've been, you know, scouring the internet to see if I can find something on this, and that's the closest I could get there.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's something, and we don't know. We have to disambiguate whether that is specifically for contractors to the airline industry. Yeah, I think you got the airline industry, and then you have the food service and the fuel services, and you know, general aviation services on the private side, and all, you know, there's going to be a lot of I don't knows at this point.
Yeah.
I think, but the overreaching thing, and just talking to small business owners, I'd love to hear from you, is what does this mean for you if this goes through? And you know, it actually grew since, at least my understanding on Friday from the congressman was that you would have the forgiveness of the debt, that portion used for wages and salaries. But now you heard him say, in addition, like utilities and operating costs and those kinds, I didn't know that was in there. I was buoyed on the side for wages.
Mm-hmm.
And also health insurance premiums. That's, tell you not to dig too much, but one of the biggest checks I write around here.
Health insurance premium.
Our side of it is one of the very big checks, one of the ones that makes me sweat.
Yeah, it's
that and the power bill, you know, for a 50,000-watt FM transmitter.
Those I wasn't going to bring it up.
Those two will make you sweat in this business. But, okay, good. Thank you for the update. Let's go to the phones, and Steve is in Mobile. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Sean.
Man, so what does that mean to you? You heard the congressman talk about some relief for small business.
Yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword. The problem is, you've got an economy that's built on debt, and we're bailing out people who, like Boeing, who has just built debt on, you know, they cashed out all their profits. It's a forest. So we're taking $2 trillion and adding to our kids' debt.
I don't disagree.
All we're doing is prolonging our pain.
I don't disagree with you, but it's one of those things where I talk about it when we're not in a crisis, right? And nobody ever wants to talk to me about some fiscal austerity and paying down debt. We should have been paying down debt. We're in a good economy, you know, all the last couple of years. We should have been not raising debt, but paying it off. But everybody has a reason why I'm wrong on that. But now we're in this situation. What do you do? Do you let this economy, for no fundamental reason, right? The fundamentals were working okay. For no fundamental reason, do you let it fall on its nose because of the virus? I mean, I'm not asking that rhetorically. I want to know your opinion.
Yeah, well, the politicians got their head in the sand on everything. You hate to say it, but they keep, just like with health insurance, just like you was talking about, our state legislation in 2015 voted to hide Blue Cross Blue Shield's books. I don't know of one reason why that benefited me and you.
Nope.
Other than my premiums have doubled, and I went from zero deductible to a $7,000 deductible. We need leadership. We have lack of leadership. And I know these guys get on there and they tote, they blow their horn, but they're the reason we are where we are. We've had 10 years of the Boeings and the buyouts, and we're, I hate to say the word, screwed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we, and you know, the big part of this, a lot of people were on the Democrats debating the bailouts for the big companies here. I don't know if you could have gotten this done politically, and I think that's a, I think it makes you feel dirty, but they probably couldn't have gotten done what they did for small business without doing what they did for those big behemoths out there.
Yep, I agree. I'm gonna send you a link to an article you read. This should be a bump in the road, this thing, if we had leadership, but unfortunately it's way beyond and way worse. And I hate to say it, but I'm fixing to walk in and buy me some 223.
See if you can find some. Everybody tells me the shelves are empty. But
yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. I just happen to be here, so you know how it is. You buy a little here and a little there and pray we don't need it.
I may or may not have some myself. Probably don't. I don't even know what they look like. Thanks, Steve.
There you go.
Steve, check it. I appreciate that. Yeah, send me that link. Let's go to Tim in Mobile next. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sean. The caller just before this last one talked about the Social Security people like me who are getting benefits, whether or not we'll get any income or any extra money coming in. And my personal opinion is that we shouldn't. That's to replace people who their wages have lost wages, and we, my wife and I, are set so, you know, we get Social Security and no other money. We have money saved, everything paid for, the house, cars, and everything. So we don't need any extra money. There may be some people out there who are on Social Security who might be damaged by this, but in my particular case, don't send me any more money. You know, give it to somebody who needs it.
You and I, I was on that, and Tim, I appreciate what you're saying. I was saying that earlier in the week. I've said that last week as well. I don't know why that check, I thought it was ham-fisted, that's going out to everybody. I think if it goes out to people that have lost their jobs, that's one thing. Tim, I do not, you know, and people say, well, you just return it to the Treasury. Fine, you could do that. But no, the check should not, I agree, the check should not go out to people that hadn't lost their jobs. I mean, I know that's, but you know what is funny? And I said this off the air to somebody. I said, looking at my text line and emails, the day that was announced, we started talking about it. A bunch of people that seemed to be rock-ribbed conservatives and fiscal conservatives all of a sudden were lining up telling me, like, well, how do I get my check? Where do I get it? I mean, the second money was discussed, all of a sudden they said, well, yeah, well, in this case, I'm for it.
Yeah, but again, it's one of those cases where, I mean, you know, I don't need it. Don't
yep.
send it to me. If they're going to send me some money just because it's going to be sent out, don't send it. Give it up. I'll give mine to the Goodwill or Salvation Army or somebody to come bend to us.
There you go. And you know what, Tim? And there may be, and I appreciate your call, there may be something they never could have thought about in Congress that happens with the American people. There might be a lot of Tims out there that look at a family that's struggling right now. That is, you know, one parent or both parents or spouses, whatever, have lost a job, and they can take that. But now all of a sudden they have largesse of a sort here beyond what they normally budget on. And you'd be surprised how many people will do for other people in those cases, not because government, but because the good of their heart and doing it right. I bet you'll see some of that. But it's still not that. It was just ham-fisted. I mean, the money should go, if you believe in this. And by the way, I will read this text here in a second because I thought this was a good zing here. But the money should go to the people who had lost their job, not just to everybody. And I know that's going to be hard because once people have heard, oh, I'm going to get some money, don't take that. Why would you? Shut up, Sean. We need... this texter, a named texter. Y'all give yourself a nickname or something on the text line, please. Makes me feel like closer to you. Not 6 feet of distance, but closer to you. It says, so are we now confirming we need socialism to save capitalism? Well, I don't know about socialism, but do you need Keynesian economics to save? It looks like that's what a lot of people are agreeing to in Washington. That's for sure. And the side note here, too, Josh, and I think Josh has worked with the hospital, but he says Providence Hospital is running low on hand sanitizer. Maybe some of the listeners have access to bulk amounts to offer. Josh, if you'll send me a text here with a contact number out at Providence so I can, if people call in with that, we can direct them there. I'd appreciate that. You can send that to the text line at 343-0106. And also the reminder, still working on this, getting those N95 or higher masks donated. Look out in your shop. You know, look out in the garage, wherever you keep, you do fiberglass work or stand in, or heck, some people use them doing yard work. You got those masks. They need them at USA Children's and Women's Hospital. Need I say more about a fantastic hospital right here? And every one of our folks working in the medical field right now, they are front line. They are front line to this, and we need to do what we can to back them up. And they're asking for donations. If you have a unopened package, you know, sometimes they come in blister packs, sometimes it's in those sleeves, the clear plastic sleeves of them. If you have those masks, you just can Google or call us for the contact info for USA Children's and Women's Hospital. They need them. They need your help, and I know we're all going to step up to help them in a big way. All right, coming back to the phones, Chris in Orange Beach, we'll go to you first. We'll return right after the news.